The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
We're going to draw from the metaphysical understanding of God's oneness into the practical guidance of Torah in the raising of children. Now, I know not everyone here has had the chance to raise children, but since you've all had a chance to be children that have been raised, it will certainly be meaningful to us all. It says in the Bible, Banim atem l'Hashem Elokechem, sons, children of God, you are. This is not as metaphorical as some would like to think it is. Because the relationship between child and parent is a microcosm reflecting the relationship between the world and God. We've already developed that the oneness of God is reflected in our world in the oneness of love. The kind of oneness that real love is, and we're not using it in its petty form, but in its ultimate form, real love is a oneness that can include and yet still remain one. That the ground, the root of all of existence is divine oneness. And the closest word in our dictionary that points to that kind of oneness is love. So in a manner of speaking, we could say the root and ground of existence is the light of God, and the light of God is love. And we learned that in the beginning there was just a simple, infinite light, an endless light, a perfect light of oneness. It is the light of love. When God wanted to create the world, He caused a withdrawal of His light from the center, creating a vacuum. And then out of the original light was born vessels, very different than the light. Well, the Tzimtzum is birth. What that metaphysical picture is, in a cosmic level, is a picture of birthing on the individual level. Because when you think of it, where did you exist before your parents gave birth to you? Where were you? People don't realize it, you know? It should blow us away. What's it take to believe in God anymore? I mean, recognize that. Look at a picture of yourself when you were a baby. You realize that was you? They say, this is you. You say, yeah, that's me. You don't really believe it, do you? If you really believed it, you'd blow your mind. Right? You could, it's you. Of course you say, yeah, I know it's me. That's me. That's a picture of me when I was a baby. No, look at it. Look that baby straight in the face. It's you. It's me? Couldn't be. How's it possible? Well, it looks like you. But that's nothing. Imagine the day you were born. The first time you came into this atmosphere, so to speak. And perhaps they slapped you on your rear. Maybe not, depends, right? And the first cry, I remember when my baby was born. What could I say? This is ridiculous, right? I looked at these people, I said, you're crazy. What's this? This is crazy. This is impossible. This is impossible. All right, let's be scientific about this. That baby couldn't have come out of my wife. That's impossible. And don't point your fingers at me. I had nothing to do with it. I mean, you know, come on. How could I do? I had something to do with this. All right? And they look and say, Mazel Tov. Why? What did I do? All right? Congratulations. For what? I didn't do anything. It's unbelievable. And yet you have to recognize, when I open up the multi-million dollar God Consciousness Center, then what we will do, show you holograms, right, of babies being born. That's all we'd have to do. Right? That's all you'd have to do. People would go in, right, they'd watch life being formed. Right? Now, I don't know what you want to call it, but I call it God. Right? What else did you just see but God? Mother Nature? Right? Big bangs? It's outrageous. Microscopic egg. You were once a microscopic egg. You weren't a microscopic egg. Because you were, I don't know, was I a microscopic egg or was I a microscopic sperm? What was I? I don't know. Imagine, Mike, you can't even see it. That was who you were. But what? And who were you before you were the microscopic egg? Where did you exist? In the minds of your parents? Did you exist in your mother? Or did you exist in your father? Where did you exist? You existed in the non-dual realm that circumscribes both your mother and your father. God, who was revealed through the love, hopefully the love, of your mother and your father. It says there are three partners to creation. Mother, Father, and God. But God's not just one of the partners. God is the ground, the source, the context. And God's light is the love. Where did you exist before you were born? Where else but in the love zone? Where is the love zone? Where is the love zone? The question is, where isn't the love zone? And these two people can participate in bringing into the world a new neshama, a new soul. To have children, to give birth to children, is to participate in creation. To give birth to children is the emulating of God. Most children in the world are accidents. Oh, I can't believe it. Oh, no. Are you joking? No, this can't be true. Oh, now what are we going to do? This is serious. Unfortunately. But to raise children, to give birth to children, means that the two plug into the one, and yet still remain the two. What is the challenge of birthing and raising children? It is tzimtzum. It is the process of self-withdrawal. Making space and place to cultivate other. To cultivate other. First we see in the conception, in the pregnancy, the woman is giving place and space in her body for other. That's the difficulty. It's my body. So that's not other. I don't have any responsibility to this baby because this baby isn't other than me. It's me, I'm it. Well, but no. There is little otherness in your body. And you know it when it kicks you. You go, ooh, what's wrong? I think it was the spicy corned beef sandwich. Oh, what's wrong? Oh, maybe it was the pickles. Oh, my gosh. It's a baby. You ate a baby? No, I didn't eat a baby. Right? It's a baby. You start to recognize a will. Other than your own, inside you, it's overwhelming. You want to know why God and women are so close? Why women are so plugged in? Because they have experienced in their body not only the menstrual cycle, but they know that they could do that. make place and space in their own body for a little otherness inside there. The cosmic womb. In the beginning there was just light. God withdrawed, and there in the cosmic womb is given birth life. The beginning of otherness. But that's only the beginning. Because in the meantime, baby other's inside. In the meantime, you eat, and it eats from you. In the meantime, it all kind of goes naturally. But then, can you imagine? This is one of the most ridiculous things in the world. In 9 months, you open up even more. Tzimtzum. What do you think those contractions are anyways? Tzimtzum. Open up. Open up. And you give birth to this creature that breathes, that cries. I remember when my baby opened his eyes for the first time. It was about 2 minutes after birth. The doctors were checking, making sure the spine is everything, and I'm freaking out. He's okay. He looks blue. He's supposed to be blue. All right, but he's blue. All right. Nobody in my family's blue. That's okay. Right? And then the baby that's holding the baby like a cat. Little kitten. The baby opens his eyes. I was about to faint. Doctor says, good morning. Right? These guys are used to it, right? Funny, you're funny. Right? What do you, good morning? Get me somebody quick, I'm about to faint. These doctors are so cool. They grab the kid. This is my baby. That's my baby. Right? It's unbelievable. There it is. Coochie, coochie, coo. Baby. Well, I was overwhelmed, right? For our first child, I went home. And I said, okay. Where are we going to put this baby? It's kind of small in this house. I mean, we got to do something. I guess, where are we going to put the little baby? Well, we'll throw out all your books from the den, and we'll put them in your den. What do you mean? Why couldn't we just put them in one of the drawers or something? I mean, you know. Well, we got to make space for the baby. Space for the baby? It's a pretty small apartment we got over here. That's okay. We'll make space. And I remember I walked in the house and all of a sudden I realized all over the house was like new baby carriage, crib, toys and rattles. I said, oh my gosh, it's all crowded in here. Wait a second. Tzimtzum. Open up and make a big space. Well, okay. We'll make space in the house for the kid, I guess. Why not? All right. Bring the baby home. Make a big hole in your life for this baby. Good night, sweetheart. Good night. Have a good rest. You too. See you in the morning. Did you hear that? Those cats again. It's not the cats. It's not the cats. It's baby. Baby? Baby? Could you ask baby to be quiet? I'm trying to sleep right now. Could you just, tell the kid to, I don't know how his sleeping habits in your womb, but out here we sleep, you know. No. Baby wants to be fed. Baby wants to be fed. What? You mean we're going to have to make space in our time for baby? I mean, I'm going to have to move out of my sleep and give him place in space in my night? I thought I was doing it in the day enough already. Well, that's the way it goes. Well, I'm about to have my meal. It's supper time. And just as I'm about to eat my supper... Oh, no. I thought we went through this already, right? Give the kid the bottle. I gotta give that kid the bottle? First I gotta eat. Right? Well, sorry. I don't know how well you're gonna eat with this kid screaming in your ears. You mean I'm going to have to hold back my appetite? Make a big space in my hunger for this kid's hunger? Yep. That's what you gotta do. More space. And more space in your time, in your house, in your career, in everything, at every time. To raise children means to make a big hole in your life, to cultivate them. And into my house is new baby otherness. Hi, baby otherness. You're so cute, baby otherness. It's tough. It's really tough. But that's only the beginning. Because the first is to make the space. The second is to give of my goodness to this little screaming otherness and cultivate them. Nurture them into becoming the true other they are. To help them discover their identity, their individuality, their unique strengths. Help them learn to make choices. Only if I love them. That's the gift. The gift is to my child the sense of self. The gift is to allow my child to someday have such a strong sense of self that one day they too can make a big hole in their lives to include me, their children, their spouses, the world. I made a space in my life for their vessels. If I love them, I'll cultivate them so that they can make a space in their vessels for my light. It's hard. It's a real challenge. It was hard enough when baby otherness had their own feeding times that didn't coordinate with my feeding times. But now baby otherness starts to walk. And now I have to tell baby otherness, baby other, don't go into daddy's office, okay? There's really very expensive, very valuable papers in there. And of course you know that if you tell baby otherness not to go into your office, that's exactly where they're going to go, right? Because you said don't go. And there, all over, your most important business papers is the Picasso of your child. All over. Red crayons. And the next morning, you've got this big meeting with the president of the company to show them the work, the project, the proposal you've been working on for the last month, and all over it, yes, all over it, is the brilliance of baby otherness. Well, you could beat the kid to smithereens, but it's too late. You've got to make a big hole in your life and say, well, and you say, oh, sweet baby otherness, do me a favor, don't touch daddy's expensive stereo equipment. And you know, that's where they're going to go. Shouldn't have said anything, Dad. Now I'm going there. Right? And then what do? Now you got to discipline your child. How do you discipline your child? You could destroy your child, and they'll never touch your stereo, but they'll never touch you either. Or you might have to learn how to be there and not at the same time. How do you discipline a child and yet not at the expense of their identity and their sense of personal confidence? It's very, very hard. It's easy to raise a child. Every time they do something wrong, you slap them out. They'll get the message. And they'll never do anything again. You have destroyed them in the process of trying to discipline them. So to raise a child is to give them free choice. And then they come in, and before you know it, baby otherness is not saying goo goo gaga, baby. Otherness is saying no. No. That's the first word. You keep looking at the kid, you say, Abba. 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 Okay, Abba. Ima. Ima. Kid looks in you, says, no. No. No, no, no. That's the first word they learn. It's no. Because it is part of the ongoing process of life to develop my identity. It's the process of self. That's life. Because that's God's plan. To give place and space and birth and cultivate others. And you're part of that holy rite. To be able to do that, to be part of cultivating others in the world. And so when we're disciplining children, or when we were disciplined as children, the question is, did our parents in the process, and are we in the process, going to damage the child's sense of self? And if you do that, you've damaged their possibility to love. Because to love is to make a big space and place in yourself for others, but if you have no self, you can't make a place in it. Very hard. Baby otherness starts to say, could I have the car, Dad? Baby otherness says, I'm going to Europe for a couple of years, Dad, Mom. What are you going to do? It's hard. Because you've got to give them the space to make their choices, but you've got to be there and guide them so they don't destroy themselves in the process. You've got to be both immanent and transcendent at the same time. In order to love, you've got to be completely involved in your child's life and completely removed from your child's life. And it's the balance that will make healthy human beings. It's the balance. Some parents are so involved in their child's life, their child doesn't have a life. There's no difference between my life and their life. No difference. The parent is so involved with their child never had an identity, they never will have an identity at that point. They're so nullified to you. Some children, their parents care too much.
Oh, look, he's got a cut on his fingernail. Oh my gosh. Oh, sweetheart, come over fast. Maybe we should call the hospital.
Hey, it's just a cut. The kid gets nervous, right? Yeah. And every little thing is like, wow, terrible. And your mother, your father isn't involved in everything you do. Everything you do, there's nothing you can do without them being part of it. Come on, you have to tell mommy and daddy. Come on. You know mommy and daddy has to be part of all your decisions. Everything you do, mommy and daddy. Right? And you lose it. You lose it. But then there are parents that are too removed. There are parents that are immanent. Right? And the world is pantheism. Your house is a penthouse. Right? Because there's no distinction or difference between me and my parents and the family. I have no sense of self. But then there are parents that are never home. There are parents that are only home. Always home. And they're always at your parties. Can't you know, like, can't we have in the basement? Right? Oh, I'm just cleaning. I was just, don't you want some more fruit punch? I mean, you know, maybe something. I mean, you know. Right? Oh, this looks like fun. Maybe I can play. Mom, Dad, please, please. Right, this is our party. Can you please? Right? They're always around. But then there's parents. They're never around. And it's hard to know which one's worse. One ones that are always around and ones that are never around. Right? I know parents. They're never around. The kid was given so much independence. You come home and there's a note on the table. Sweetheart. Right? There's a frozen dinner in the freezer. Just put it in the microwave oven and it'll be ready for you in 2 minutes. Right? I'll see you tomorrow. Right? Never home. Right? Your parents were messages on the door. Right? They were never home. Right? They got home too late, you were already asleep. And they got up early, you didn't get up yet. And you never see them. But you know they exist. Right? You know they exist. Right? Because they cut your allowance. Right? Right? And you make checks and they bounce. Right? Use credit cards that are, you say, oh, they must be around somewhere. I know you're looking around somewhere. I know you're in my life somewhere because I'm not free. Yeah, you're never around. Yeah. Kid comes home crying their eyes out. Right? Mother and father are speaking right now. Mommy, Daddy, a piano fell on my head. That's very nice, sweetheart. Go play with your brother. No, Mommy, Daddy. Right? And you want to know why children exaggerate things? Because they're trying to get your attention. Trying to get your attention? Parents are so busy with their lives, they don't give you a context for your life. So too many parents become the content of your life and you don't have life. But then there's parents who do not become the context of your life. They're never around. Never around. Never had any confidence. There are parents that say they love their child so much they take them to school every day till they're 30 years old. And I'm talking to kids 30 years old. My mother loved me so much, she used to drive me to school. They never cut the apron string. And then there's parents who let their kids go on their own way before the kid really wanted to. It's a balance. We're talking about the challenge of godliness. Immanence and transcendence. I've got to be there and remove myself at the same time. It's so hard. Recognize how hard it was for your parents. It's hard to be a parent. It's hard to have that balance of being there and being beyond. The ultimate perfect parent is God. But we all try to emulate God. So we've got to be there and remove ourselves at the same time. Immanent transcendent. We have to discipline our children to make choices. And yes, there are lots of kids that are... Oh, he's a sweet kid. Kid doesn't have any personality. That's why he's a sweet kid. Right? Kid's too frightened to do anything wrong. And it's funny, when you really love your children, you laugh at them when they do something naughty. You say, you naughty kid. But you love it. Because they demonstrate character. And you want a kid with character, don't you? So that's the bill you're going to have to pay, you know, if you want a kid with character. So don't be surprised later on. They argue with you a little bit. But you want a kid with no character? They just say, yes, sir, daddy. Right? Whatever you want, mommy. That's a kid. It's not a kid. And so too in the relationship with God and man. God must be, in order to respect man's freedom, absent from the world. If God was eternally present, we would be overawed. We couldn't make a decision. If God is never present, then we could make really the wrong decisions and destroy ourselves in the process. I'd like to read you a quote from Eliezer Berkowitz, wrote a very important book called Faith After the Holocaust. If man is to be, God must respect his freedom of decision. If man is to act on his own responsibility without being continually overawed by divine supremacy, God must absent himself from history. That man may be, God must absent himself. That man may not perish in the tragic absurdity of his own making, God must remain present. The God of history must be absent and present concurrently. The light surrounds the vacuum. The light fills the vacuum. And so too, parents. To raise an otherness is to give them free choice. To give them the confidence to make decisions and make choices, which a lot of people don't have. To cultivate a child, to nurture a child in the context of love, is tzimtzum, withdrawal, and to be there at the same time. It's tough. But discipline cannot be at the expense of their personality and their character. You've got to give your child the space to make their choices. Let them see the consequences. Even if you know that this is going to break their toy, maybe you've got to let them do it. And they'll see the consequences. Consequences give you a lot of confidence. Hey, my decisions make a difference. My decisions make a difference. To discipline children, you've got to punish your child. In Judaism, a person that does not punish their child hates their child. Why? Well, can you imagine you walk into the room and you're 2, 3 years old, you open up the refrigerator and decide that you want to reach for a bottle of milk which is much too heavy for your abilities, and it comes crashing onto the floor. Your mother, father walk in and say, "Oh, that's okay. Don't worry about that. What's a little milk anyway? That's okay. Oh, I'll just clean it up. Don't worry about it." Kid's a little surprised. Okay, so open up the refrigerator again. All right, this time they start taking out the eggs and they fall over the floor. Mother comes in and says, "Oh, look how cute. Scrambled eggs. Nice. Oh, don't worry about it. That's fine. It's nothing. Oh, I'll just clean that up. Don't worry about it." Kid starts to get a little frustrated. It's fine. It doesn't make a difference? Well, okay. Now they take out their eggs and start throwing it on the wall. I walk and say, "Oh, how artistic. This kid has future. Modern art." If you don't punish your kid, then your kid doesn't have any confidence that what they do makes a difference anyways. What's the difference? When you punish your child, you want them to understand your choices make a difference. There is consequence and you'll clean it up. That might be the punishment. They have to understand there are consequences. That's why it's wrong to punish your child later on. You got to do it then. Because the kid has no understanding. That has to do with what he did. Right. But then again, if you're always punishing your kid and they are so clear of the consequence, they become like Pavlov's dog, right? They can't do it anymore. They don't have free choice either. It's a balance. That's what life is. To live is to balance, to walk that narrow bridge of imminence, transcendence, involved and beyond, present and absent at the same time. When God judges man, that's the greatest gift. If you didn't judge me, that would mean that what I do doesn't make a difference. And so, in a funny way, I rejoice in trembling on the day of judgment. I rejoice because I say, you know, it made a difference, a cosmic difference. I tremble because it's going to make a difference to me too. But it's a gift. The judge is a lover. And because parents are lovers, they must be judges. Love isn't just giving, it's judicious giving. It's judicious giving. There's some parents that give their children too much. They break their vessels. Why did the vessels break? Because God gave His light completely to the vessels. They weren't ready to receive it. They broke down. We will understand why God did that. But parents are often surprised at how rebellious their children are. Their children are running away. The kid goes to U of NP, the University of North Pole. Why do you have to go there? There's a very, very fine, special course in ice cube making, Mom and Dad, and I have to go there. Why? There's a school in our district. There's a school in the city. Why do you have to go all the way to North Pole to go to college? Gotta get away. I need my space. I need to discover myself. Sometimes you gotta let them do it. Children are running away from their parents. Why? Because their parents gave them too much. And as the parent is calling up, but I gave you everything, they turn around and say, that's exactly the point. You gave me everything, and in the process, I lost it all. Because there's one thing you didn't give me, my sense of self. People don't want life on a silver platter. They want to be able to do it on their own. They want to be able to make their own money, to buy their own stereo. Parents don't realize that in their overflowing of giving, 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 they're actually taking, taking, taking the child's self-esteem and confidence that I could do this. Let me help you with that. Let the maid clean up your room. I gave you so much. I gave you such a beautiful life. A beautiful life is a life where I can struggle and learn how to make it on my own, to stand on my feet. Babies we carry in our arms, only to teach them how to walk. And you know what? Sometimes you teach your child to walk. The child is like, walking. And the parent's going, come on, come on. You know what that child's probably saying to mom? You. Bum. You look at me, I'm going to fall. How can you do this to me? Right? The parent says, come on, come on, come on. If you don't love your child, you'll never teach them to walk. And to teach them to walk means to let them fall. You're going to have to let them fall. God has to let man fall in order so the man can get up on his own. You've got to let him fall. Teach your child how to ride a bicycle. You're going to have to let go. And yes, they're going to fall. They're going to have bruises. And from their perspective, who knows what they might call you. But I love you. And I've got to let you fall. Because only he who can fall is he who can climb. God, let those vessels break. Gotta let it break. Parents have to let go. They've got to learn to let go. And children have to recognize how hard that is for their parents. And therefore, recognize that children should still hold on a little bit. So parents can have the ability to let go a little bit. Right? It's got to be a trade-off. This is a partnership. It's not a one-way deal. The parent has to foster the child's sense of independence. They've got to let go and yet be there so the kid doesn't break their head. But then a kid might have to fall. Fostering independence is love. Giving that child context and content so that they can make a place and space and love you. So I remember I walked in one day to the apartment of some friends of mine. They hadn't had children. They'd been married for a number of years, and it didn't seem like they were interested in having children. And I all of a sudden, one day, I see a puppy dog. And I said, I didn't know you were pet lovers. So, not really. So what's with the dog? We're experimenting. We're experimenting. We're thinking of having children. What's that got to do with the dog? Don't you see? You know, like, sweetheart, it's your turn to feed the dog. I thought it was your turn to feed the dog. No, 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 no. It's your turn to feed the dog. Oh, sweetheart, did you walk the dog? I walked the dog. Why do I have to walk the dog? You should walk the dog. Right? We're experimenting whether we want to have children. I said, how's it going? Right? We're not sure yet. We're not sure yet. Do you think that a little hush puppy has anything to do with a baby? Do you think that this is in any way what it means to have a baby? Having a dog and having a baby are completely different. Why? Because nobody raises their dog to grow up move out, and call me on Sunday so I can visit your litter. Nobody does that, right? Right? Nobody fosters independence for pets. You say to your dog, okay, Poochie, bring me the paper. Dog looks at you, says, Poochie, watch it. Let's try it again. Okay, how about this one? Poochie, roll over. Dog looks at you. Hey, Pooch, this is getting tough, right? Hey, watch it, kid. Right? An animal that says no is an animal you get rid of. Right? Animals, disobedient animals are not animals that you want in your house. But disobedient children is what a child is. A child that doesn't say no is a sick kid. A dog that only says no is a sick dog. Right? We raise children to be independent. All parents want is, why don't you get a job? Why don't you do something with yourself? Why don't you get married? Why don't you... Parents don't want their kids to live in their home forever. They want them to move out at the right time. At the right time. But you've got to be your own man, son. Got to be your own woman, daughter. That's what I've been trying to raise you to be. A person who can love. You don't want to create a dependency. We want the dog to be dependent. We don't want the child to be dependent. We want love, which is beyond independence or dependence. It makes place and space for otherness. And you know, there's some parents that love their children only when they're babies. Because when they're babies, they're helpless. But when the kid grows up and finally says no, they can't deal with the kid. And yet they want more kids. You don't understand, why would you want more kids when you see you can't deal with kids? They like babies. But if they could dispose them when they get like 2 years old and get a new one, that's what they would rather do. But now I'm stuck with this one. As they grow into an otherness, which I can't deal with, I feel threatened by their otherness. And for that reason, people don't want children. Because they're afraid that their otherness is conflicting with their oneness. But if you emulate God, you'll understand. The more children, the miracle, the more space in your heart. The miracle is, each child makes you love all the other children even more. It's weird. But I know it's true. You wonder, oh, well, how are we going to be able to distribute the love now? Oh, all of a sudden there's more. Each kid gets more. Because you recognize that raising children is just making yourself bigger. You're opening yourself up and you're including more and more and more and more. It's selfish and selfless at the same time. But people don't want kids anymore. I once mentioned we were walking in a shopping mall in Toronto. People say, oh, look at the baby. Oh, can we look at your baby? And all of a sudden it hit me. Did you see any other baby carriages in here? Like it was like a rarity. Soon they'll put babies in museums. Oh, because of the baby museum. There's still some of those around. People don't understand that you become bigger when you love. Through letting go, through making yourself small to include others, you actually made yourself bigger. It's a strange way. So too in the relationship between God and man. God is saying to man, Lech lecha, go to yourself, get up, make choices. God is fostering and nurturing Abraham's sense of self so that there can be a covenant. So that Abraham can then make a hole in his life to include God. When it says that God created man in his own image, you know when people are in the image of God? When they love. when they love. It says, what is the blessing that we make when two people get married? Sheyatzaret Adam B'Tzalma. You were four men in your image. Why don't you say that blessing when a baby's born? Why under the wedding canopy? Because that's when you really see the image of God. When one includes two and yet remains one. That's the image of God. That's the greatest emulation of God. To raise children. To nurture people. You should know when you teach somebody, they're your children. Raising people and children is not only the biological child. In every situation, you're the parent, someone else is going to be the child right now. Different situations. And so too, the Torah teaches that you must be like God. God created man in his own image. What is that image? The ability to love. You know, parents want to create their children in their own image. Did you know what that means? To be a little baby junior. Hey, just to chip off the old block. And you know what? God is really funny. Because God knows exactly how to distribute the kids. God gives to doctors kids who are artists. Ha ha ha. Let's see you let that one out. And your kid isn't like you so much. You really quickly find out how different you are. But when parents want to create their kids in their own image, that means that you'll be just like me, boy. I'm a doctor, you're a doctor. I'm an athlete, you're an athlete. I'm a musician, you're a musician. Right. The Torah says you got to teach a kid according to their way. First, who's the kid? Then cultivate them so they can be who they uniquely, authentically could be. Not a chip off the old block. Just like God. God created man in his own image, which means that man can be unique like God. We say God is the unique. Man can be unique like God. And so unique, just like God, give place and space to others. Foster their identities without feeling in any way conflict or threat that when that human being becomes godly, that in any way is going to conflict with my omnipotence. Doesn't it? Only contributes. And what real omnipotence means. So nurturing the child, nurturing them, and what does it take to nurture? Commitment. You've got to be committed. The child has to feel you are committed to them. If a kid does something wrong and you say, if you do that, I'm throwing you out of this house. Well, then the kid feels no commitment. If you do this, I might knock you out, but you're staying in the home. I mean, you know, the sense of, you know, I'm your father, I'm your mother forever. And I'll be beside you, but I'm going to have to demonstrate to you and help you understand consequences to the wrong choices. But this feeling of actions lead to the severance of relationship. No siree. That's called Christianity. Because Christianity says there's a New Testament. And by definition, love is unconditional. When God makes a covenant with his people, then it's eternal. It's eternal. You are sons of God. And throughout the scriptures, the prophets might say, you rebellious children. Rebellious, yes, but still my children. You corrupt children. Corrupt, yes, but still my children. Forever is the unconditional love. Love is unconditional. It means that, yes, there will be consequences. Doesn't mean everything you'll do I'm going to say, okay, you. But commitment. Unless the child feels the commitment of the parents, then the child will not be free to make the choices, lest they make the wrong choice, and that will dissolve the relationship. So the commitment, the covenant, if I feel that at any moment I could be fired from my position as child in this family, then it's hard to feel confident that you can make the right choice for fear it might be your last choice. And therefore, commitment is crucial in all loving, and in this case, certainly in children, raising children. So the tzimtzum, the constriction, is not simply a metaphysical image. It is the process of life. It is the challenge of love, and particularly within the guidance Tzimtzum and Torah gives us in raising children.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.